or visit us on the web at www.huntertonhealthcare.org.
USA Radio News with Chris Barnes.
Most of President Trump's executive order concerning immigration to the United States from six Middle East nations taking effect last night.
So we have lawyers on standby. We have lawyers at JFK monitoring the situation on the ground.
That's a spokesman for the New York Immigration Coalition, which did have lawyers at John F. Kennedy Airport in New York last night, should any incoming travelers need their help. While so-called close family is still allowed in from those six largely Muslim nations, other loved ones like grandparents, aunts, and uncles are not. The House passing two immigration bills yesterday. One, Kate's Law, increases the sentences for illegal immigrants who re-enter the U.S. after being convicted of crimes. The House also passed the No Sanctuary for Criminals Act, which cracks down on sanctuary cities. Both bills now head to the Senate. You're listening to USA Radio News.
Staples knows that when the leave behinds for your sales call get left behind at your office, it's time. When you need to print 30 pages and you're 300 miles from the office, it's time. And when the intern packed the Harrington file, not the Farrington file.
Ugh, my bad.
It's definitely time. And it's times like these when you can count on Staples. Access your files from email, the cloud, or USB, and then print, copy, fax, or scan them, and get back to business fast. Visit your nearby Staples. It's pro time.
Right now at Kohl's, it's not our everyday sale. For a limited time, shop hundreds of epic deals in-store and online. No coupons needed. Women's tees and tanks, just $5.99. Girls' swimwear, $10. Beach towels, only $8.99. And an ice cream or cotton candy maker, just $29.99. Stock up, save big, and get $10 Kohl's cash for every $50 spent. It's not our everyday sale. Right now through the 4th of July. Only at Kohl's. Select styles. See store or Kohl's.com for details.
It's official. President Trump will be meeting with the Russian President Vladimir Putin next week. It will be their first face-to-face meeting since Trump took office and will take place at the G20 summit in Germany. Now, former President Obama had a famously chilly relationship with the Russian leader. The Trump-Putin meeting, though, comes as the U.S. investigation of Russian interference in the presidential election continues to ramp up. A federal agency says there are currently 29 major wildfires raging in the southwestern U.S. Here's Mark Mayfield.
That includes the massive Bryan Head Fire in southwestern Utah. That blaze has blackened more than 50,000 acres south of Salt Lake City. Crews are also busy fighting large wildfires in California, Arizona, Washington, New Mexico, Idaho, and Nevada.
Police in Paris say a man's under arrest after trying to plow his vehicle through a crowd at a mosque. This time no one was hurt as his SUV was blocked by barriers outside that mosque in a Paris suburb. You're listening to USA Radio News.
I have to get to sleep.
Tom had a stressful day, and now he can't shut down at bedtime.
Need sleep.
To fall asleep fast, millions of people turn to Unisom sleep gels. They're non-habit forming and quickly help you sleep soundly so you wake recharged. Tom? Unisom sleep gels. A stressful day deserves a restful night. Use as directed. Active ingredient diphenhydramine hydrochloride.
Opioid addiction by Americans still skyrocketing. That's the finding of a new study just out from Blue Cross Blue Shield, showing the number of people addicted to both prescription and illicit opioids rose by nearly 500% from 2010 to 2016. The analysis of the insurance company's members finding about 1.5 cases of opioid abuse among every 1,000 members in 2010. By 2016, that number had risen to over 8 out of every 1,000. New Jersey's Governor Chris Christie is instructing all state agencies to get ready for a possible government shutdown. It's first since 2006 if a new budget isn't passed by midnight tonight. Here's Sarah Lee Kessler.
New Jersey's Republican governor is blaming the impasse on Speaker Vince Prieto, a Democrat.
The only obstruction left is the Speaker, who for some reason has decided that the interests of a multi-billion-dollar insurance company are more important to protect Then the people's ability to have their government remained open and operational.
Without a budget, Christie says the state would be forced to shut down beaches and parks on this July 4th weekend, the state lottery, and tell hundreds of non-essential state workers to stay home.
And starting tomorrow, anyone 21 and older can legally purchase up to an ounce of marijuana in Nevada for recreational use. For USA Radio News, I'm Chris Barnes.
Good morning, Hunterdon. This is Big C coming to you from HunterdonChamberRadio.com at the studio offices of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce in Flemington, New Jersey. Good morning, Hunterdon kicks off your day by providing you with local news, traffic, and weather, as well as light topics through Vitamin C, Wake Up Call, and Chamber Chat. I also have many guests focusing on Hunterdon County community, business, and education. Listen to me every weekday morning from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Good Morning Hunterdon, HunterdonChamberRadio.com.
All right, it's 9:07. It's time for Hunterdon Chamber Radio weather. Flemington at 79 degrees right now. Clear skies, 10% chance of precipitation. Today is the last day of June, and it'll be partly sunny. A chance of showers and thunderstorms this afternoon. Hot with highs in the lower 90s. Southwest winds 5 to 10 miles an hour. Chance of rain is 50%. Tonight, mostly cloudy. A chance of showers and isolated thunderstorms in the evening. Then a slight chance of showers after midnight. It'll be humid with lows in the lower 70s. South winds 5 miles an hour. Chance of rain is 40%. First day of July, mostly cloudy, scattered showers and thunderstorms in the afternoon, highs in the upper 80s, and it'll be humid. Chance of rain, 50%. Clears out, and we have mostly sunny and humid with highs in the upper 80s on the 2nd. Mostly sunny, highs in the upper 80s on the 3rd. For July 4th, mostly sunny, highs in the mid-80s, and partly sunny with chance of showers and thunderstorms on the 5th. Temperatures in the area. Got 80 in Raritan, 82 down in Kingwood, 76 over in Frenchtown, 83 up in Easton, 72 up in Asbury, 77 in Washington Township, and 80 over in Lebanon. Good morning, Hunterdon. That's Hunt Chamber Radio weather.
Lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. Let me repeat, lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. This is not a crazy diet or exercise program. No drugs, hormones, or shots. You can lose 20 to 45 pounds in 40 days with Nutrimost Resonant Frequency Technology to measure 2,800 of your body's key biomarkers. Using NRF, they can find and correct the cause of your weight problem by measuring factors affecting weight gain, including metabolism, fat burning, fat storage, appetite, detoxification, and hormonal regulation. It's safe, fast, easy, and effective, and you won't walk around hungry or have cravings. It's even doctor supervised. Schedule a body composition analysis and consultation. You can be transformed in 40 days guaranteed. This is a limited time offer, so they can't wait to see you look great.
So call 888-718-7077. That's 888-718-7077. Or visit njthin.com. That's njthin.com.
Welcome back to Good Morning Hunterdon, HuntChamber.com. I have my guest here today. Todd Rainey is division head of the Hunterdon County Health Division. And it's, I've been telling you, it's Mosquito Control Awareness Month. And Todd is by far probably the best qualified and most verbose about this topic. So I am so happy that he agreed to come on in here, Todd. Thank you so much, man. Great to have you.
You're quite welcome, and thank you for having me.
This is awesome. So I know you are well-versed on many subjects about insects and other creatures that we have to worry about, but we'll focus a little bit on mosquitoes today, and I'm sure you'll throw in some other cool subjects that will scare the heck out of me. I see you as kind of like Johnny Carson back in the day used to have Jim from Mutual Omaha's Wild Kingdom on. And Jim used to bring all these crazy animals
that John Carson used to freak out about. And I'm afraid you might have like spiders or something right across the. So anyway, Todd, I don't know if a lot of people have met you or know about you, but why don't we start from the beginning? How did you get involved in your passion for insects and other creatures?
You know, I always tell this story to my mother in particular, because she suffered through this. When I was very young, I used to love collecting animals. And right. At some point, I had forgotten about this until fairly recently. I had a box full of snakes in my garage that I just collected. And I always assumed they were garter snakes. Turns out they weren't. And I'm not really sure what I had in there. And one thing led to another. I remember going on nature walks where I picked through the mud and collect insects. Turns out they were dragonfly larvae, which I didn't know at the time.
Right.
And as I got into college, I just sort of kept this hobby. And a long story short, in terms of a career path, is at some point, I had graduated college kind of looking for full-time work. I had worked in the turf grass business, believe it or not.
Okay.
And somebody came up to me and said, I got a problem with gnats. It's in Hunterdon County, New Jersey, and I hear you know something about gnats. Now, kind of like I always joke around about a computer person.
Right.
You can know something about computers just a little bit more than somebody else and seem like you're an expert. Right. I knew very little about gnats, but I knew just probably a tidbit more than he did.
Right.
I'm embarrassed to admit I grew up in South Jersey, but I didn't know where Hunterdon County was. So came out here, and the next thing you know, we start this black fly control program. And then fast forward, I went through graduate school, and so happens a job opening had come up in Hunterdon, and I ended up here 17 years ago. So kind of a really circuitous route, but
yeah.
Ended up right here in Hunterdon. I've been here ever since.
So when you were collecting snakes and other insects and stuff like that, did you see yourself, did you recognize yourself as being a little bit different than many?
I think it was the attention I got. People thought it was neat. I'm sure that's what it was. Little did I know, it was an exercise in death defiance. I'm sure at some point, I don't know that I ever picked up a rattlesnake, but it may have been right. In that pile. So I think it was probably that it was a way to be neat, you know, in front of other people, I'm sure.
Okay. So you were an attention grabbing
individual. I suspect that's the case.
Any times that you've absolutely freaked somebody out, when they
realized?
Oh,
yes. To this day. Oh, I got a quick classic one. I got stories for everything, of course. So we do little bug demonstrations to kids, and normally
right.
Ages first through whatever. Every now and then we'll do a pre-K group. And I kind of forget, even though I have young children myself, of the difference in attention span. So I have this little trick I play where I bring in a roach, I don't show anybody, and I ask the boys in particular, I'll say, who can catch a baseball? Because the boys love to show off, I can catch a baseball. And what I do is I throw this roach at them, and they get scared and drop it, right? So I go into this pre-K class, and I'm asking, who knows how to throw a ball? Well, nobody answers. And the kids didn't register. They're like, they didn't understand, they're too young.
Right.
So the teacher finally decides to play along. She didn't know what it was.
No.
Says, well, I know how to throw a ball. So I threw this roach at her, and she fell flat on the floor. I felt terrible. It's a good thing she didn't hit herself. But,
oh, my.
Yes, so that happens all the time, actually.
Okay. All right. So when you're a young kid and then you're getting into your teenage years, you weren't moving in this direction.
No, I went – well, I had an interest in sort of life science, I guess, for lack of a better term.
Okay.
Getting outdoors – seeing creatures, that kind of thing. So when I went to college, I anticipated getting involved in something like marine science or something like that.
Okay.
And my mother is funny. My father was on the other end of the spectrum. He was a linguist. And I barely passed French in high school. He couldn't figure it out. But I was always into this sort of nature thing. And that was kind of my mother's thing. So she would recommend things to me. But she was actually interested in me pursuing food science and this and that. So it took me about 2 years in college before I finally found the path. And that's where I took up the stronger interest in insects. And then, of course, that's what I went back to graduate school for. And that was a lot of fun.
Right. So when you went to college, you weren't pursuing this?
No, I didn't start out in that direction. And it turns out there aren't many undergraduate degrees in entomology. Like many things, that's a specialty that you get afterwards. Yeah. I didn't know that, of course, going in.
And were you pursuing this turf grafts thing?
What happened was I got a part-time job on campus for a gentleman. Mm-hmm. Who made a name. His name is Reed Funk. his name is all over Cool Season Turfgrass and the lineage to this day.
Okay.
And I got hooked up with him through a friend, and it was part-time work and painstaking work. I mean, literally planting plots of grass in the 90-degree sun and
right. And
watering it all day and this and that. And I never really developed an interest in that, but that's how I met somebody in the turfgrass industry who happened to be out here in Hunterdon. His name is actually still employed here, Dr. John Graney at this Rucker Snyder Farm, and he had gotten involved in this black fly problem because he was getting hammered by black flies on his farm.
Yeah. So what were you pursuing? I'm so curious now. You got all this other way. What were you actually originally setting out to do?
Freshman year in college. I'm trying to think what my major was. I guess maybe we didn't pick right away, but I was heading down the path of food science. I had actually taken some course in food science, and I never...
Well, you're a science. So you're a science person.
Sort of science background, but you know, what's funny is I couldn't stand chemistry. It was very dry to me.
Right.
And all these food science courses were chemistry related, and I just didn't get it. And this ended up going down the road of more toxicology in the insect world, and that I found very appealing. Right. And it's like warfare between insects and plants of who's building up chemicals to defend whom, you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
And I found that to be fascinating.
Sure.
And to this day, I think that's a really neat thing. And that's how insecticides are developed and all that sort of thing.
Were you into biology?
Yes, I like biology. Okay. Yep, yep.
Right. Cool. So we set the stage for who Todd is and how he got. So now the black fly problems come along. Was there any type of programs, anything going on in Hunterdon County at that point? Or you were,
so, is it interesting?
You were the external consultant.
The funny part about how I ended up in the mosquito business is, I'd work with black flies, and that program was taking off here, but very, you know, only restricted to the northwest part of New Jersey.
Sure.
So I went to graduate school. I'd actually gotten accepted out in Michigan Tech up in the peninsula there, and I thought that would be really neat. About 2 weeks before I made a decision to leave, the gentleman I had worked with on black flies here in Hunterdon, his name is Wayne Kranz, medical entomologist, came up to me and said, look, I've got an opening in my graduate program for a mosquito student. Would you be interested? I know you've been interested in this black fly thing. I said, sure. So I came in. He actually said you could work with black flies if you'd like. Well, I came in at some point. He gave me the best advice I've probably ever had in the world. We're going through this, and he basically said, look, if you want to get a job, you need to work with a bug that either kills somebody or kills something that they eat, as in you know, food crop and that kind of thing. And he said, I know you love this black fly thing and caddisflies, but he said, at the end of the day, you're going to be this unemployed person for the rest of your life, but you might love it. So his advice was, go with the mosquito project, and that's how I got involved in mosquitoes. And so that's how I developed my expertise in mosquitoes, and it turns out there's lots of them causing all kinds of problems.
Wow. So is there a concentration on mosquitoes that the Hunterdon County is doing, and you've expanded it from there to talk about other insects?
Yes. So fast forward, I got my master's degree working on a mosquito that's very rare in Hunterdon, of all places, very common in southern parts of New Jersey into really the southern part of the U.S., and it causes a lot of disease problems. But in any event, when it came to Hunterdon, I realized West Nile virus had just come on the horizon. We were going to do a lot of mosquito work. I knew we had this black fly problem, so we kind of set in to do that work. Meanwhile, something I wasn't terribly familiar with but was big out here was the problem with Lyme disease, which is tick-borne.
Right.
So that quickly became sort of a component of our work. One thing led to another. Next thing you know, basically, we're dealing with any insect that people have problems with. So we serve as a clearinghouse, if you will, for anything from carpenter ants to bed bugs to stink bugs, whatever the insect du jour is, where they're provide advice. And like I put to most people, before you spend gobs of money trying to kill this thing, talk to us first. It might be fine, or maybe you do have to spend gobs of money, but we'll at least break the news to you very lightly at the office.
Okay. All right. So are we unique in Hunterdon County that this is not something that you would normally experience in an urban setting?
No, it's mosquitoes are funny. As the story goes, we have about 65 species of mosquitoes in the state of New Jersey.
So that I didn't know at all.
Yeah, and we've got 300 plus in the country, 3,000 worldwide. And everyone has its own little niche. Everyone does its own little thing. Some are pests, some are not. Some are beneficial. Some cause disease, some do not. And depending on where you are, your species composition will vary. So, for example, the mosquitoes we see right here in Flemington Borough are much different than the ones we see, say, in the floodplains of the South Branch of Raritan up in the northern part of Raritan Township. Our big thing, for example, right here in the borough is something we call the Asian tiger mosquito.
Uh-huh.
Little devil of a mosquito, it needs a bottle cap's worth of water for its larva to grow.
Right.
Very unusual, using these expanses of acres. And it bites like a dickens. It's out in the middle of the afternoon when most mosquitoes bite at night. Right. And that's an introduced species. So all throughout the county, we constantly survey for these, as do people throughout the state, to define what their problem is, if any, and what needs to be done about it.
Wow. So that just sets the stage for what we're going to talk about for the rest of the day, because 65 different species, and I only thought there was one. and we'll find out more about that and more. We're talking with Todd Rainey. He's the executive Direct Department of Health over in Hunter County, and we're going to talk with him more about controlling mosquitoes and anything else that's coming our way right here on Good Morning Hunter and right after these messages.
¿Sabía que de cada 5 personas hay una que lucha con síntomas difíciles de salud mental? NAMI es una organización estatal sin fines de lucro. Somos empleados voluntarios. Somos la voz de la nación sobre las enfermedades mentales. NAMI te ofrece grupos de apoyo, educación e información. Nuestro programa educativo de Familia a Familia está dirigido por miembros de NAMI para familiares y amigos de personas que luchan con dificultad de salud mental. Llámanos al 888-803-3413. Recuerda, no estás solo. NAMI está contigo y no hay salud sin salud mental.
When it matters most, our award-winning team of emergency physicians and nurses provides sophisticated care 24 hours a day. Superior emergency care at a moment's notice. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care.
Welcome back to Good Morning Hunterdon, Huntshimmer.com. Todd Rainey, Department Head of Health at Hunterdon County, is here to talk about mosquito control and anything else that's coming our way. So, Todd, 65 different species of mosquitoes just in Hunterdon County. Have we always had 65?
Well, let me clarify that. About 40 and 165 in the state.
Oh, in the
state. So what are we missing? Okay. Most of the salt marsh mosquitoes, and there's many species of those. I'm sorry, I've forgotten your question already.
Have we always had 40?
We probably have more. In fact, we just added one to our species list this year.
Now, how do you learn that?
So what we do is we have sites throughout the county, probably a couple hundred, where we do what we call routine surveillance. Often that is putting traps out, collecting adults. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's actually collecting larvae. And what happens is, depending on rainfall events, a lot of mosquitoes lay their eggs in the soil, and the soil is dry. And as those areas fill with water, they'll hatch.
Mm-hmm.
In a year like this, where we've had a lot of successive rain, that water line gets higher and higher on the soil profile, and some mosquitoes lay their eggs higher and higher. So they might not hatch every year. In fact, some will take, they'll hatch out, once every 5 or 6 years. So, and sometimes if they're rare species and they only hatch out every 5 or 6 years, we may go on years without even knowing they exist. Now, often those mosquitoes don't play a huge role in either nuisance or disease. It's more of a curiosity that we find them. But sometimes they do, and that timing, depending on what kind of disease is out in the environment,
right,
can be critical. It's like putting together a puzzle. A lot of mosquitoes, a lot of disease. If you get that combination, you can have a problem.
Right.
But you can have one or two of those at play and not have a problem at all. And that's part of the surveillance we do, is to define when are we having a problem in terms of transmission of disease to either people or animals.
When did we learn that mosquitoes were a transmission of disease? It didn't come to the popular psyche until some of these more deadly diseases.
Yes, especially with the way people travel these days. So this goes back to the discovery that malaria was caused by mosquitoes back in the 1800s.
Right.
That used to be assumed malaria is caused by bad air. In fact, that's, I believe, what the derivation of the word means. And found out that it was actually transmitted by mosquito. And that kicked off a whole series of interest in mosquitoes and their biology. So if you fast forward to the turn of the 20th century, right around the early 1900s, there's a gentleman by the name of John B. Smith. He was actually an attorney by trade, but a very good entomologist as a hobbyist. And he's the one who actually discovered a lot of mosquitoes in the United States, particularly in New Jersey on the East Coast. And he actually put together legislation to help manage these mosquitoes.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of that management worked. Some did not. This goes back to the days of mosquito control in the salt marsh. But most people might be unaware that there's a time when Cape May County was almost uninhabitable because of the malaria problems. And it's only because of mosquito control that now that's a tourist destination, not to mention living area for people year-round.
Right. Ethically, now we're getting a Darwinian here. Are you taking us out of balance by doing this?
That comes up. Yeah, I've had that question before. Here's my perspective on mosquito control. We have these very intricate food webs, as we know. Mosquitoes are sort of on the bottom of that. They're filter feeders. What's interesting is these days in killing mosquitoes, we're actually using mostly bacterial products and that sort of thing. In effect, what we do is by killing mosquitoes, actually sometimes we provide a food source for other animals. And we see this, the classic example is actually in the black fly business, where when we kill black flies, we'll actually see an increase in caddisfly numbers because they feed on dead black flies and not affected by these bacterial products. So the short answer is we would never kill enough mosquitoes probably to make a difference anyway because there's trillions of them.
This is a pebble in the ocean.
Yes. And that's why everything is very focal and strategic these days. Now, there was a time in the history, particularly around the 1940s and 50s, synthetic chemicals came on the market, there is a sense that we can eradicate mosquitoes. Turns out this was a disaster. It was tried in South America to get rid of Aedes aegypti, and mosquitoes became so resistant to the insecticides, there was actually more mosquitoes than there were before they started. So everyone knows these days it's a management thing, not extirpation of mosquitoes. It's impossible to do. If you manage it effectively, you can be very sensitive to the environmental concerns and provide that quality of life that people expect these days. So my answer is it's if it's done properly, it's not a problem at all.
Okay. So then what is the mission? What is your goal as being part of the Department of Health and focusing on mosquitoes?
So specifically with the mosquito focus, our goal is to prevent transmission of disease or other health problems by mosquitoes to people. And so what other health problems do we see? Well, particularly with young kids, very allergic to bites and that sort of thing. So our goal is to reduce these mosquitoes to a level where they can't affect people in that manner. On a broader scale in the health department, it's sort of the same theme. That is to provide a quality of life that people expect these days. So, for example, we would not expect to have people die from measles in Hunterdon County in the year 2017. Mm-hmm. That might have been an expectation in the 1930s. In fact, it happened all the time. Same holds true with pandemic influenzas. So our goal is very similar there, and that is to protect the population from either extreme morbidity or, God forbid, mortality from these diseases that exist.
Okay, so but how is this? I'm sitting here trying to pair together the enormity of what you explained. How many species we got? The fact that it's constantly changing. You can't. There's no way you can eradicate mosquitoes. So how are you trying to focus in on just the finite of protecting us when you can't get rid of the source of the issue in the first place?
So it turns out, I mean, a lot has helped technology-wise with us, but. So, for example, we've got very specific traps that monitor populations, and we know when they reach a certain amount, we have to kill those mosquitoes. And that can be done in a lot of ways. So, for example, right here in Flemington, our mosquito that is causing problems is produced in essentially things that should be thrown away, garbage on the side of the road, debris from construction. So when we see that mosquito show up in a trap, our first thing to do is survey the area and see where it's coming from and do source reduction to get rid of it. So sometimes it's that simple. And we get this all, you would think that would be, how often do you get that? Oh, we get residents all the time calling, saying, hey, we've got a mosquito problem. Sure enough, we go out there, unbeknownst to them, they're producing it themselves. So what do? We steer them into actually controlling their own mosquitoes, basically.
Gotcha.
Other times, it's what we call water management problem. We've got storm drains that have been clogged by, we call them floatables, various things that have been caught up garbage-wise. And it's a matter of clearing those out. So once you clear those out, you get rid of the habitat, mosquitoes go away. The third step would be actual larval control. So, for example, we've got mapped areas of where we know our historic species will produce if and when we have certain amounts of rain. So when we get those amounts of rain, we survey those areas. If they produce mosquitoes, we go out and kill the larvae, and you never actually see the adults. And that's very similar to the black fly program where we kill the larvae, you actually never really know there's an adult problem. We kill enough that it's almost unnoticeable.
Ah, I see.
And then finally, if all that fails, for whatever reason, we can spray mosquitoes, the adults. We don't do that too often. It's very intensive. Mm-hmm. And that's where you get into mosquitoes start, you know, flying for miles. How do you capture that? There are certain techniques that actually work pretty well. You might not be aware, but during the summertime, we have these thermal inversions where it's hot on the ground and it flips, becomes cool at some point. If you put insecticide in there, it actually gets capped. It looks like, in fact, if you use an aerosol fog, you'll see this. it stays in an area, and that will kill those mosquitoes in that area. Okay. So, yeah, the technology's changed a lot. The tools we have changed. And now what used to be gallons of, say, material to use to kill mosquitoes, we're in ounces. If we did, for example, if we did adulticide mosquito control, we're looking at less than an ounce of active ingredient per product these days compared to gallons back in the 1950s. Right.
Somebody just get a clarification here. So you said there's about 40 or so species in Hunterdon County. I'm assuming that not all of them are concerned to us.
That's correct, yes.
So somehow you've been able to marry the certain species that we really have to be concerned about, and then you just keep an eye on the rest of them that are...
That's right. So even, for example, we've got a species or two that can carry malaria.
Right.
We monitor those. Why do we monitor those? Because if they ever became a problem... That's something we didn't know. By and large, we'll get those in traps. They never exceed an amount that would cause a problem to transmit. And then we've got this whole slew of mosquitoes that they typically don't bite. They're not very active. Leave them alone. And then really what it boils down to, out of that 40 species, there's probably less than 10 that we actually have any interest in controlling. And we simply find those. And when they reach a number that's we think there's an elevated risk to virus transmission or mm-hmm. other problems, we'll take care of them. And often what it is, so for example, you get a new resident that moves in town. We see this all the time. I've got a mosquito problem. What we have to do is go out there and define the problem. Once we realize where they're coming from, then we actually attack them at the ground level, whether it's source reduction or otherwise.
Right.
And that may take some time, but we can figure that out because we know mosquitoes, I should mention, are very specific about where they lay their eggs. The ones that lay their eggs in these little microhabitats refuse to lay their eggs in open swamp areas and vice versa. So we can ID all those, either in the larval or adult stage.
There's a very scientific, strategic method to everything you're doing here.
Very much so, yes.
But doesn't it boil down to, isn't there, maybe I'm completely lost in how malaria would be transmitted. So if you said you're concerned about the possibility of a population of mosquitoes growing to a point where malaria could become a problem, aren't we simply boiling it down to one mosquito, one person, and we could all of a sudden have something happen?
It's really, you know what it is? It's a numbers game, and it's all based on probabilities. So, for example, in our own county,
yeah.
I know in a given year, let's take West Nile virus as an example, I know background noise would be about 5% of our mosquitoes are going to test positive, our mosquito samples, every year. And I know at that level,
So where do they get the malaria from? My opinion is, and this is where you're going to set me straight, is that somebody possessed malaria and they've transmitted it from one person to another.
So here's what happens. Malaria is an interesting example. In the malaria case, the reservoir, as we say, the sink where all the disease is actually the person. Not true with West Nile and some of these other viruses. So basically, if you have an infected person and a mosquito bites that person, mosquito picks it up, they can give it to another person. Very similar to chikungunya virus and Zika virus.
Right.
So in that case, we actually know if we have malaria cases in the county. And it so happens we have not had any in recent history in Hunterdon. But already in the state of New Jersey, we do have some malaria cases. And those folks have come in from other areas. Now, depending on what type of malaria, there's several different types, and what mosquitoes exist, those mosquito programs, I'm sure, are putting those data sets together, seeing, is there any potential for a problem here? The answer is likely, this time of the year, probably no, just because the mosquitoes haven't built enough yet to be a... Mm-hmm. So it's really more of potential. You need the probability of being able to pick up that disease from the bloodstream at a certain time during the day, especially in the case of malaria, and have these mosquitoes present. It becomes a numbers game, and what you end up doing is putting these data sets together and just giving yourself a relative idea of what the risk is.
And is it doesn't go from a mosquito to other mosquitoes. It's simply a mosquito to a person, and then another mosquito can pick it up from another person.
Yes, that's the most simplistic
case. So we have to have that chain.
Yes, so in the most simplistic, what we call arboviruses, and malaria is not a virus, but we tend to keep them in the same group. The most simplistic situation is it goes from mosquito to person to mosquito. The more complicated scenarios you see, as is the case with, say, Eastern equine encephalitis or West Nile virus, is you actually need a different reservoir host. So, for example, it's usually a bird or some sort of animal that serves as a reservoir. Mosquito has to pick it up from that. Mosquito has to get it from that. Then mosquito has to bite a person. We usually, in this case, those cases, we call the person or the horse a dead-end host. Not that they're going to die, but they can't serve as a reinfecting host. They're it when they get the disease.
And this doesn't get passed from the mosquito to its larvae?
That's a very good question. And this comes up with every disease we get. The first question we get is two things. Can it be transmitted transovarially from mom to egg to larva, or transstadially from small larva to big larva to pupa to adult?
Right.
Almost always, and there's no exceptions that I'm aware of at the moment, the answer is no. It appears that in the process of molting, that these diseases are broken down. But usually every time a disease comes up, and the same holds true with Lyme disease and others, is can it be transmitted from mom to babies?
Right.
And so far with all the diseases we've seen in this country, the answer has been no.
So that changes your focus.
Very much so.
It changes your focus on, I get it. It changes your focus on knowing the source, i.e. a person that comes in with malaria or dead birds that are possessing this West Nile. Or your focus is to reduce the population of the specific species of mosquito that would grab that host or get it from that host and transmit it.
Yeah, and we take it a step further. This is really, really, it's neat. So, for example.
I told everybody this is the guy.
See? He's coming. So if mosquitoes emerge out as a brood, they have not taken a blood meal.
Right.
If they can't transmit virus, we call these nullipars, by the way. They have not had a blood meal, have not produced eggs.
Right.
We know that they are not infected with virus, right?
Right.
So sometimes what we'll do is if we get a batch of mosquitoes coming in wondering about their possibility of transmitting, we'll tease out the ovaries. And we can – actually for my graduate work.
This is a mosquito.
And you should – don't drink caffeine when you're doing this, by the way. Tease out the ovaries. You put those under a microscope, and you can see whether they have laid eggs or not. Because what happens is – they have these, the eggs pass through a duct. And when they do that, it stretches it out. Once the egg leaves, it goes back. But they never constrict the way they ought to. So when they have eggs and then they come back, it looks like a strand of spaghetti all over the place. If they haven't, they've got these little knobs. They call them dilatations in the ovaries. And you can see that. So, for example, if we get a population of mosquitoes that 90% we call nulliparous, have not had eggs, we know there is no disease risk there whatsoever. And that weighs into our decision of whether we need to kill them or not.
Wow. Wow.
Very tedious work, though.
So how do you study the size of a mosquito's ovaries? How do you get to that?
That
didn't exist back in the 1930s.
No, this was developed. This technique was actually developed in, I guess it was the 70s. It was really pursued more in the 90s. And it was a mechanism to show. I mean, the reason people were asking the question was, the question comes up is, how many batches of eggs can a mosquito lay, right? Mm-hmm. And the answer is, we're not sure. A lot of mosquitoes, but basically, every time they pass a batch of eggs through, they leave what we call a dilatation, a knob. So if you get two knobs, that means they've laid two batches of eggs. Mm-hmm. And the reason that's important is every time they lay eggs, that means they've taken in a blood meal. Their probability for taking in a disease gets greater and greater. And that was sort of the interest that was developed. Actually, by the World Health Organization. That's who actually developed this technique. So we use it now.
Wait a minute. I just caught that. So somehow the laying of the eggs is causes them to go and look for
more blood. Yes,
more blood.
It's all hormonally driven by mosquitoes.
Okay.
So mosquito. What's funny is a mosquito actually doesn't need blood at all to survive.
Right.
It could feed on sugar water all day long. We'll actually do that if we rear mosquitoes and we want to keep them. Just give them sugar water. What happens though is, they get a drive hormonally to take blood.
Right.
And when they do, the blood turns into yolk turns into eggs, they pass it out. That hormone then kicks in again. It gives them another drive to go get blood.
Right.
And that's how. And basically the reason female mosquitoes die is they basically exhaust themselves. They can't produce it. They basically die because they produce so many eggs that they're spent. To make a long story short. And the funny thing is the males live for a few days, they mate, and they die. So, at least the females live for a long
time. It's a tough existence.
Yes.
Tough existence propagating the species. All right, I got to get back to another strain of our questions, and that is, how do you keep track of the source?
So, when it comes to what I call the wetland areas,
the actual diseases.
So it depends on the disease. So, for example, let's switch gears for a minute to some tick-borne diseases like Lyme disease.
Yep.
We know historically, good example, that white-footed mice, Paramyscus is the genus of that, would be the sink, if you will, the reservoir for that disease.
Mm-hmm.
Neat study happened where somebody caught all the mice in an area, and lo and behold, their ticks still had Lyme disease. And what they realized is, there's another source, and that was some passing birds, robins, that kind of thing.
Right.
So often what happens is there's a lot of sort of work behind the scenes. This is where your agriculture experiment stations get involved to do that basic science of what's actually transmitting the disease, what's actually the reservoir for the disease. And then over time, that may change because the disease might change. So, for example, we see a tick-borne disease called Powassan virus now where that virus is mutated. It used to not be compatible with our deer tick. Now it appears to be. So just because you say something in the year 2017, it might change, you know, 10 years down the road. That's something you got to pay attention to.
Yeah. But getting back to the original question, I was like, how do you know that there's somebody in our county that had malaria?
Okay. So usually with human cases, we find out because somebody ended up going to the hospital.
So there's an obligation by the hospital?
Yeah, with certain diseases, we call them reportable diseases. Mm-hmm. They have to be reported to county health departments, state health departments, et cetera. Same with some tick-borne diseases. Now, the reality is, if you have things like malaria, Rocky Mountain spotted fever, you have no other choice but to go to the hospital because you're going to have a 104-degree fever and feel like you're going to die. The beauty of a lot of these things with modern-day medicine, there's a lot of medicines that work to cure them,
right,
or at least keep them at bay. So,
right. And how do you learn about the West Nile type?
So with that, we're doing two things. Number one, we're testing mosquitoes. We actually, every week.
So the mosquitoes give you the hint.
And that's our sentinel, if you will. Yes. So we will find out there's virus in mosquitoes before people. Mm. That way it gives us a chance to go in to manage those mosquitoes. And that technology has changed dramatically in the last 20 years.
Yeah.
Very sophisticated laboratory tests that we don't do on site here. Sometimes in a sense, they're actually too sensitive, but that gives us a heads up. So the good thing with these mosquito viruses is a lot of good laboratory techniques these days.
Now, over the last two decades, we've had a couple of crazy things that have come from foreign countries.
Yes.
It became part of our popular psyche at that time when those things happened. That seemed to be a change in our behavior. I guess we weren't traveling as much.
I'll tell you what, it is a perfect storm of a combination of things. First of all, the way we travel.
Right.
Not only that we travel more, but the manner in which we travel. There was a time, for example, when the bottoms of the airplanes were fumigated for insects. Doesn't happen anymore. So this probability of moving mosquitoes around is a lot higher. The probability of people having diseases that are hidden is a lot higher than it used to be. The other thing, too, is because of expansion into other areas around the world, people are moving into areas where the diseases, the genie's kind of been in the bottle. It's been localized there, and
right,
now they're moving
right
it out from there.
Yep.
And in fact, the worst-case scenario, not in the mosquito example, but we're seeing species jump what we call the species barrier. So, for example, Ebola is a classic where that cycle is restricted to a primate, you know, thing in the woods, and that sort of skipped that species barrier to humans. And those can be devastating just because there's no historical tolerance for those diseases in human populations. So
Sure. It's
that combination of factors, people moving around much more readily, moving around in a manner that we've never seen before, and then even within our country and others, moving into areas where there's been diseases that just haven't been exposed to humans.
Right.
At least not readily.
So how do you keep track of the world's...
We do, to some degree.
You're sitting there with your finger on the pulse of the world going, I know this isn't here yet.
But Zika was a classic example. We saw this one show up in the literature in the 1960s, but more recently, probably about 15 years ago, it was embedded with chikungunya virus in Polynesia. And you kind of sense, given the mosquitoes that were transmitting it, we have those here now in our country. They're invasive mosquitoes, by the way,
right,
that would happen. The other one that's out there is like Rift Valley fever, and there's a few of those
right
in Australia and other areas where you can see those making the leap once conditions are set. And the thing we know historically, whether it's the insects or the disease themselves, is once things settle in here, there's a chance it could take off. A lot of times it fails, but we see this with invasive insects all the time. Most notable example recently in our area was the brown marbling stink bug, where it settled in and took off. Now it seems to have hit an equilibrium. That often happens. But yeah, for a while there, it could be quite traumatic if it's new to the area.
And when I first met you, you would describe to me how you were watching something that was, I forget which one it was, you were watching how it was hitting south, Florida, and you were actually tracking it on a daily basis, climbing up the country.
We'll see that. Yeah, and sometimes it's the other way around. So, for example, go back to Powassan virus. This is our latest tick-borne disease, which is not very common here yet. That, for the longest time, was restricted to Powassan, Ontario, where it's from and named. And we've seen that creep through Maine and New York State and now in the northwest part of New Jersey.
Yeah.
And that's always the big question is how big of a problem will it be here? Will it expand further?
Right.
And sometimes we don't know just because we don't have enough information on the life history of the problem.
Sure. We're going to take a break. We're talking to Todd Rainey. He's the department head of the County Health Department, and we're talking about mosquito control, and we'll be right back.
I'm Joe Peters of Weikert Realtors. Buying or selling a property can be one of the most expensive undertakings you face in your lifetime, and selecting the right realtor to help you through this process can dramatically affect your success or your failure. I have personally helped hundreds of buyers and sellers through this process in achieving their dreams and goals in 100 in Somerset County areas over the past 10 years. I believe that this experience should be a smooth, seamless one for you and not a roller coaster ride. But the best judgment as to whether or not I deliver this to my customers is their reactions in their own words.
One of the things we liked about Joe was that he would return calls within minutes if he wasn't able to pick up.
You know, Joe guided us through the process of selling our home and made a complicated transaction appear seamless.
How do I accomplish this? By approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, I try to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them my own. Then, I go out and take the mass amounts of data that we have and distill them down to a few understandable action points to be considered. Finally, I control the entire process through technology to ensure that we're not going to hit any speed bumps along the way. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let me show you how to take my level of professional expertise and put it to work for you in achieving your real estate goals and dreams. I can be reached at 908-238-0118. Thanks for your time.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
No me moleste mosquito. No me moleste mosquito.
Welcome back to Good Morning Hunterdon and HunterdonChamber.com. Todd Rainey's here. He's the department head of the Hunterdon County Department of Health, and we've been talking about mosquito control. I bet you before you started this show, you had no idea as a listener about all this information. And I don't, Todd, we were kind of joking with you off air. You claim you're not nearly to the same depth of information as experts. I don't know if there's anybody on the planet that has as much information stored in your head about mosquitoes, but you'll be the judge of that. One of the things I had read just recently that they're starting to work on a laser that is able to locate a mosquito in the air, and the laser has the ability to zap their wings. Have you looked into anything like that? Any other crazy technology?
You know, there's a few things out there, particularly when it comes to trapping mosquitoes. More specifically, I think, what was it, the Microsoft company was involved in that.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't followed that too much. I can tell you the latest thing on our front here in New Jersey is using drones to either kill mosquitoes or do surveillance. And that's sort of on the technology front. That's sort of been the latest and greatest that I've seen that's out there. And that's really fascinating stuff because you got a lot of areas, not so much here in Hunterdon, but you get in your urban areas where you've got sites that you just can't get to by foot very easily.
Right. So
yeah, and
it takes you too long to get there.
Yes. All day event and that kind of thing. So And there's a few hiccups along the line there, but one of them is just with air restrictions, particularly in Northeast Jersey and that kind of thing, is actually getting through that. But we've seen some neat stuff come out of that in recent, really in the last 6 months or so. So I think that's sort of the future, at least with some of our control and surveillance efforts.
So what is the day in the life of Todd? What do you – you talked about all these crazy things that you got to do to keep track of this. Do you have a cycle, some type of schedule that you go through on an annual basis? On a day-to-day, it says today it's time to go and look for mosquitoes in this area. Because I don't – I mean, we don't see – it's not like you put up a yellow truck, a truck with the yellow lights and say the mosquito control's here today.
Not anymore. Yeah, it's all – let's put it this way. If you were to do that, if you just decide to kill mosquitoes on a cycle, you're going to miss most of them because that cycle's constantly changing. So what we do a lot of – we're able to predict out at least a week or two and what we think is going to happen. And usually, you know, you hear those things at the beginning of the year, oh, we think the mosquitoes are going to be bad because of this. And always my response is, if you could tell me the exact rain patterns for the next month, I'll tell you exactly what's going to happen the rest of the summer, which is impossible, of course. So, but we can usually predict that a week or two. So even today, as we're getting into the holiday week, of course, we're looking at, okay, here's where we know we are on these programs, mosquito blackwise and otherwise, what needs to be done, you know, on Wednesday when everybody gets back and that kind of thing. So that's typically how we start our day. Now, my role has changed, I should mention a bit, and that is I oversee some other programs in our health department, so extend that to septic and wells and hazmat and that kind of thing. So I've become more of an administrator than a field person these days. Right. But I still do get out. In fact, I'll get out today and just do some back-checking in some areas just to make sure we're caught up for the weekend. And that's always a lot of fun.
But so you've got a place in Hunterdon County that you're going to go and check.
Oh, today. Yes. Yeah, I'll be out on the South Branch of River a little bit today.
And what made you decide that you had to go there?
Because we had done some blackfly control recently. Right. And I should say, just because you try to kill insects, you should not assume that you actually succeeded. Wow. There's all kinds of factors that come into play. In the spring, it's cold water. They don't feed as much, the insects. In the summer, it can be a silt load because of rain and that kind of thing. So, and your products might fail, you know, as the heat increases. So what I'll do is I'll verify today that we're good to go. And if we're not, then we've got to either decide, do we need to come this weekend or can this wait till Monday, you know, to kill these things?
Because it's that important.
Yeah, and that's the thing is what can happen is when you kill a brood of insects, when you fail, things can change overnight. And a classic example I always give the people is you go down to the shore, nothing, and you get hammered by mosquitoes one day. And that's because you had a brood that came off all of a sudden, a gazillion insects. And they weren't there the day before.
Right.
So we want to avoid that if possible, because that can undo all the success we've had as well, you know, for several months.
So this, everything is very transient. A lot of game-changing moving parts. Sure.
Very, very unpredictable. Every year brings you something. In 17 years, I've never had the same field season repeat itself twice.
And all this, you've collected all this information just in your being here as part of Hunterdon County.
Yeah, so prior to my arrival, there was no mosquito control program here.
Right.
Or blackfly control program. So we're fairly new. Now, part of recognizing National Mosquito Control Week is what's interesting is we look back in New Jersey in particular, we've got mosquito programs that celebrate their 100th anniversary in the last couple of years. Union County, Essex, May. So a lot of those are disease-based, malaria control in particular. So, yeah, it's been going on for a lot longer than I've been doing it here in Hunter, that's for sure.
Neat. Now, we've talked a lot about this, and it's hard to it's easy to get lost into the concerns and all the different aspects of it. But, and I, you know, I trust you. I understand your success and I understand your level of determination to keep us safe. But in whole, regardless of your efforts, are we better off nowadays than we were in the past, even though we've had these outbreaks that have hit us in the past couple of years?
I think we're certainly more prepared to handle them. You know, the beauty of this is it's not that I don't care about West Nile or some of these others, but we're always looking ahead.
Right.
And what we have now is we have infrastructure in place, we have technology, we have expertise. So long as we keep moving in that direction, I feel very comfortable knowing that we'll be able to handle the next event. And that's the scariest thing, I think, in our business, whether it's here or on the health side, is if and when you get a big problem, are you capable of protecting your residents?
Right.
And I feel very comfortable in saying we are now. Yeah, I feel very good
about
that.
So what's the next thing on your radar? What are you sitting there saying, I hope that doesn't come this way?
Well, that's a good one. There's a lot of frightening things on the virus front, whether it's mosquitoes or otherwise. The problem with viruses is they're very insidious. we don't have antibiotics to cure them. You know, these antiviral medications
right.
have to be developed on the spur of the moment. So typically my response to that sort of thing is anything on the virus front, whether it's mosquito-related or not, mm-hmm. is kind of what keeps me up at night, just because those can also take off. And we've seen that historically, pandemics, flus. I mean, can you imagine these days? Well, for example, let's take the yellow fever outbreak, Philadelphia in 1797, whenever it was. A quarter of the population of Philadelphia died.
Right.
A quarter of the pop. Can you imagine?
No.
A quarter of the population of Huntington's is dying, and that being an acceptable
yeah,
response
okay.
by government. So, yeah, that's okay.
It's all right. Yeah. It was just a quarter, just 25%.
So in some respects, us in general, we're spoiled by our own successes in medicine, where that's unacceptable.
Yeah.
So away from when we have a case, well, that's unacceptable. So. That's the same. That's the problem we have is we can never be perfect, and we know that.
Yep.
And we just desperately try to be perfect. And, you know, at some point, let chips fall where they may. But at least I feel very comfortable in saying we're able to address things that come our way. I feel very good about that.
Cool. I know you wanted to get out a point about Lyme disease.
Yes, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention it. So we are heading towards the other side of the curve with Lyme. That's the good news. So we peaked. Looks like our cases... Generally speaking, throughout the state of New Jersey, a little bit less than they were this time this year, last year, so pretty good shape there. But I should mention to people, nymphal deer ticks are still out. They're going to start to fade through July, and they'll be gone.
Mm-hmm.
You can't get Lyme disease all year round, so just be mindful of doing your tick checks, particularly with your kids who might not recognize that. I pulled off, I think, 7 nymphal ticks from my daughter alone. She's 6 years old. So they're out there. If you pull them off early, like anything else, will probably prevent a lot of disease.
Yeah, we'll have to get you on here just to talk about ticks.
Yes, absolutely.
I know we got you scheduled again for July. Last minute or so, what do you want people to call you? What is the protocol to get involved with the health department?
Yes, if you have a mosquito problem, you're not sure if you have a mosquito problem, you're just concerned about disease in general, feel free to reach out to us. The number is 908-788-1351.
Mm.
You can email me. That's T. Rainey, so T-R-A-I-N-E-Y at C-O. Hunterton.nj.us, and we'll find somebody who can address your concerns.
Excellent. Man, I knew I was going to get a bombshell of a guest today, so I'm so happy that you came on. It's entertaining. It's something that I do not know a heck of a lot about. It's something that I know you do, and we got to do this more often because it's so great to get an inside scoop on the intricacies of such a unique science.
So I have a lot of fun doing this, so...
Without a doubt.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll have to do it again.
Excellent. Soon. Great, man. Thank you so much. Have a great 4th of July.
You too. Thank you.
All right. That's Todd Rainey. Been my pleasure to be with you, as I am every weekday morning, 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. I'll be back again on Monday morning. Vince Arlino says, never say I should have. If you think you have a mosquito problem or you think you've got a problem with Lyme disease or ticks, call the health department, and they'll help you figure out whether you've got to take precautions or not. We'll be back again on Monday. Have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you soon. Stay tuned for Susan Lack's Hunter and Helpline and Home Sweet Home right after these messages.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's physician referral service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
USA Radio News with Chris Barnes.
First, everyone buzzes about what President Trump says about MSNBC co-host Mika Brzezinski. Now everyone's buzzing about what Brzezinski has to say about President Trump.
I'm fine. My family brought me up really tough. This is absolutely nothing, but I think for me personally. But I am very concerned,
as to what this once again reveals about the President of the United States. It's strange.
Brzezinski there this morning on Morning Joe after she and her husband Joe Scarborough were supposed to be off on vacation, but they showed up to discuss that tweet from President Trump in which he called them psycho and crazy and alleged that Mika was bleeding badly from a facelift when they visited his Mar-a-Lago resort months ago.
And I don't think that it's a surprise to anybody that he fights fire with fire.
White House spokeswoman Sarah Huckabee Sanders, and this is USA Radio News.
They're odor-free, non-greasy, and they can be used daily. Don't let the others fool you with their curveballs. Hear it from a Hall of Famer and hit a fastball with the Blue Emu family of products. They work fast, and you won't stink.
Available in stores nationwide.
This current draft doesn't get the job done, but I believe we can get to yes.